Okay, shalom, shalom. Thank you to the Lorches for picking us up and hosting us tonight. This topic is not random. This topic has actually come up very recently because there's another, if you've been following the news, there's been some outbreaks again of, different things. Things that we vaccinated for. In a couple of places, and particularly in from communities. It's been, in a lot of places now. So this conversation, and it's actually when I started looking up the topic, I found actually a number of articles on the topic. A number, you'll see I quote from a few. Double Lichtenstein again has a thing on this. Some headlines, a lot of interesting stuff on this topic. So what's the issue? Why would anyone even ask this question? Is it appropriate? Is it a problem to vaccinate? What is the issue even? Where does this even question come from?
Because there's life and safety at risk.
So there's life and safety at risk, but what's the issue?
You're
the issue,
harm
right? So the issue before we get to the halachic issue is first what's the if you haven't filed it in the past, I'll give you a really, really, really quick summary. I don't really want to get into all the details. Not here to get into a machlokas about whether, even though it is part of the conversation, about the medical science behind vaccinations. But the basic story is like this. Look at source number one for a second. This comes from Rabbi Asher Bush, who was a rabbi in Frisch, rabbi in Muncie, and was the head of the Vad. The Vad Halacha of the RCA for a number of years. Wrote an article on this topic called Vaccination in Halacha and in Practice in the Orthodox Jewish Community. And he starts his article with the following, it's just good because it's a good summary of this issue. And what's the issue is as follows. In 1998, a study was published in The Lancet, which is a medical journal in the United Kingdom, linking the MMR, measles, mumps, and rubella vaccination with causes of autism. This study was widely circulated in both Great Britain and the United States, but just for the record, he didn't even say in the article, that wasn't the focus of the article. It was sort of like a side point that was made in the article was this comment, like a correlation between the MMR vaccine and autism. Despite the numerous other studies that confirm the safety and value of these vaccinations, nevertheless, the publicity surrounding this article from The Lancet, particularly the follow-up broadcast in 60 Minutes, led many parents to question the safety of childhood vaccinations. This study created significant fear such that rates of childhood vaccinations decreased in America to a relatively small extent and in Great Britain to a significantly greater extent. Correspondingly, there were a marked increase in these diseases, particularly measles and mumps. This has included fatalities as well. While most medical authorities doubted the accuracy and significance of this study, it was not until February 2010 that a retraction was printed in The Lancet. In May 2010, the General Medical Council of Great Britain found that the lead author of the study, Dr. Andrew Wakefield, had acted dishonestly and irresponsibly, quote, and revoked his license to practice medicine in Great Britain. Prior to this, 10 of the 12 co-authors associated with the paper had withdrawn their names. It is also worth noting that this now discredited study had focused on the link between thimerosal, a mercury-based ingredient, and autism. The ingredient was removed from all vaccines other than influenza as of 2001. The influenza vaccine is produced with and without thimerosal. Nevertheless, as a result of the study and the publicity that followed, many parents remain skeptical and either postpone or avoid vaccinating their children. Numerous organizations and websites still exist devoted to the anti-vaccination cause, casting doubts on both the efficacy and safety of various childhood vaccines. That's where this issue came from. It's more complicated than that. There's been more discussion and more people who tried to produce more studies. Multiple studies have been printed in multiple significant, very, world-renowned medical journals which have found no causation, no correlation even between vaccines and MMR, and the MMR vaccines and autism. Nevertheless, it continues to be an issue that comes up. Jenny McCarthy got behind this a couple of years ago and made a very big deal about it. That's one issue that people raise with MMRs. The other issues they raise are certain other toxins, like we mentioned, mercury and other things that can be found in, they argue, are toxins that can be found in vaccines. But that's really it. That's the question that people raise with vaccines. And the arguments against such an argument, you know, against this is that medical literature as a whole doesn't really support the concern. It's been dismissed by just about everybody. I worked actually the summer after my senior year of college. I wasn't at that time planning on going to psychology graduate school. I was not planning on being a rabbi. My plan was to get a PhD in psychology, and I was doing research so I had an opportunity to work on an autism research study in Children's Hospital in Boston, with really like Harvard Medical School, you know, psychologists, and this was in 2006, and at that time this was like very much an issue, and these researchers, you know, were really working hard to get people to get off of the MMR argument and to try to find something else. What really is causing autism, and what is the real issue here? One of the reasons, just as an aside, MMRs are given in about 18 months. And that's usually when you find, not always, but in certain situations, children with autism, well, they're progressing normally, and then it's around that same stage of development that they start to regress, and all the types of things that become associated with again, the big spectrum of autism, obviously. But this is one of the issues, and that's one of the reasons why has gotten linked, some argue, is because of the timing. It's the same timing when these things usually start. But the bottom line is that the vast majority of medical science has shown that the rates of these diseases, measles, mumps, rubella, polio, smallpox, etc., either dropped off very significantly or are gone from society. We're talking about levels of deaths of certain diseases that have gone from, you know, a couple hundred thousand people, you know, in a year to almost nobody. You know, the prevalence of polio, these are diseases that, again, that doctors say, and I'm not a doctor, I'll say that from the start, I'm not here to talk about medicine as an expert, I'm not an expert, but that you ask people who are in medical school or doctors today who have never seen some of these illnesses, because they're basically gone. So that's just an important point. But the other part of this is that's just one question. If a person has a concern, it's not just a question of, you know, should I do something protective of my body? Why shouldn't you? The question is, well, what about when there's some type of concern, some type of risk? For the record, again, there are other risks associated with vaccines. Kids can get, you know, have reactions to vaccines. Certain live vaccines could, in theory, you know, one in 200,000 or whatever could actually get the disease, you know, the things like that could happen, used to happen at certain times. And again, I'm not speaking to facts on the ground. There's certain things.
Some people who are susceptible to, who for whatever reason, because they're immunocompromised, are unable to receive the vaccine.
Good. So we're going to get there in 1 second. So okay. That's just a question of, you know, but for the most part, the side effects of these vaccines are very, very mild. And, you know, we're talking the vast, vast majority of people, it's a very, very, very low level risk. But that nevertheless, for those who are worried about a risk, there's two risks. There's the risk of taking the vaccine, and there's a risk of what if you don't. Okay, the what if you don't is sort of funny because it's something. There's a certain threshold, a certain percentage at which point everybody's protected to a certain extent, right? So certain vaccines, certain diseases, 90%, sometimes 95%, sometimes 97%. That once a certain percentage of the population has been vaccinated, everybody else is covered. Right. So the question becomes, good. So if everyone else is vaccinating, Can I decide, well, for my kid, I don't want to take that risk. Everyone else has already taken the risk. I don't have. Can I argue that I don't have to? That's number one. So that's the first question. The second question is it just a question? Well, the first question is, as my personal choice, choosing between the two risks. Okay. Second question is it really about personal autonomy? Because if enough people decide to stop vaccinating their children, we will find measles, mumps, and rubella start to come back into the fold, as we are finding in certain communities where people are not doing it. Right? And children will die from these diseases. They'll have all kinds of, you can have all kinds of long-term, you know, permanent brain damage in certain cases, meningitis, all kinds of things that come because of these diseases. These are scary things. And the question becomes, if enough people decide to stop, right? So what can happen? It can come back. And besides that, another very important point, there are certain children who can't get the vaccines. If you're an immunocompromised child, a child who has cancer, right, who's undergoing treatment, can't get a vaccine in certain situations. So that kid is already immunocompromised. They have to be some of those 2-3%. If another child decides, another family decides not to give their kid a vaccine, who's going to pick it up? So maybe their kid picks it up and they'll be okay. But if this kid picks it up, they could die. And that's what happens. Those are the types of kids who die are the kids who are immunocompromised. So at what point can I make my own? And by the way, some vaccines are not 100% protective always. There are certain vaccines that even if you take it, it's a 98% protection. And some people still get it anyways. The question becomes, at what point do we say, it's very nice of you to have your own personal autonomy, make a personal choice, but at what point can we force someone to get a vaccine because you're putting other people at risk? And what halachic question is there in terms of that question?
That was a quick question. Are we lumping in the flu vaccine to this discussion, or are we just talking about ones that you get once in a lifetime?
Generally we're talking about like MMRs, the ones that you get, like the cycle. Again, there is what this be said apparently. Again, they say that there are certain things that they're continued to vaccinate for that maybe you don't need to. And there are certain, but I'm talking like the general regular measles, mumps, rubella, polio, like the ones that are really smallpox. Smallpox.
There is no vaccine for.
Smallpox is an interesting question because smallpox has actually disappeared. Right, so that's a little bit of a different question, but for the general approach, the general vaccines that a doctor's going to give in general.
So not an annual flu vaccine. That's not.
I don't know. I don't. That's a good question. I'm not. I don't want to speak to it. I'm not. The bottom line is, whatever this is, talk to your doctor about it. Anyways, if you have more questions about that, but we're talking more about the typical vaccines. Not that flu can be dangerous also. Two other questions. Can a school decide? Some of you may have gotten emails from some of your schools this week. I got one. I was listening to Double Licensing on this topic, and I got an email from one of my kids' daycare that they have changed their policy, and they are now decided that no child will be allowed in the school without a vaccination. What is that? Where is that coming from? It's coming from the third point, which is what's called the religious exemption. In certain states, there is what's called, in the state of New York for sure, there's a religious exemption. A person can say, I have a... Even though they require every child to have updated immunization records, anyone who's ever put a kid in school knows you have to get that done, right? Nevertheless, if a person has a profoundly held religious belief to not get vaccinated, they can get a letter from their doctor, and they can allow, and legally in certain states, you can either force or at least allow that child into the school, even though they don't have vaccines. So the question would be, would Judaism be appropriate? Could a Jewish person say, I have a very hard, a strongly held religious belief to not get a vaccine, to not vaccinate my children? Okay? That's the question number four. Okay? So again, all three questions are my personal decision when vis-a-vis other children, other people. Can the school say, I'm not going to let a kid in without a vaccine? And number four, does a religious exemption apply to the Jewish religion? Is there such a thing that a Jewish person would be able to say, according to the halacha, I'm not supposed to get a vaccine, and that's why you should let me in with that? Okay? Good. Okay. A little background. One of the first times the question of vaccines came to the fore in halacha, specifically. Source number 10, number 2. Dr. Reichman, you remember Dr. Reichman? He came to visit our shul a couple years ago. Very people like him a lot. He wrote an article on this topic called On Jewish Action a number of years ago. In 2007, 2008 was another time when there was an outbreak of measles in the Lakewood community and other places that this became an issue. In the late 18th century, smallpox decimated the population of Europe. Millions of people died from the disease, and a high percentage of children were afflicted. In the 18th century alone, an estimated 400,000 Europeans died each year. When potential relief from the horrors of the disease came on the horizon, there must have been an unabashed excitement. The cure, or more accurately, the mechanism of disease prevention, however, was unique in the history of medicine. It required exposing healthy individuals to disease, hopefully a mild form, in order to prevent the development of a more serious disease. Biology 101, right? How does a person fight disease? Through antibodies. If you expose the body to a weakened form of disease, the body produces antibodies and therefore is able to be prepared when the stronger form of the disease comes. So fine. The procedure involved the removal of a fluid from the pox of an afflicted patient and the subsequent injection of that virulent fluid into the body of a healthy individual. Scientists believe that the healthy person injected with the fluid would develop a mild, non-fatal form of smallpox and would therefore be spared the likelihood of fatality if later exposed to the spontaneous form. This was indeed the case the majority of the time, but the procedure was not without risk. Some of those inoculated developed a severe form of the disease and died as a result. An estimated 0.5 to 2% of individuals, imagine that's a very high percentage of people to get a vaccine that would die. Okay? In fact, there's a tombstone in Long Island, New York, with the following epitaph. In memory of Peleg, son of Thomas and Mary Conklin, who died of the smallpox inoculation. January 27, 1788, age 17 years. In 1785, Rabbi Avram ben Shlomo Nansich published a small pamphlet entitled Alei Trufa, detailing the tragic loss of his two children to smallpox, two of his children, and beseeching the rabbis of the generation to allow inoculation. However, the treatment was considered controversial at the time, as never in the history of mankind had one taken a healthy individual and injected him with the very cause of an illness, even if the objective was to prevent a more severe disease. This unique treatment posed a dilemma for the Torah-observant Jew. The Torah gives license to the physician to heal the sick, but does it give him license to bestow illness upon the healthy, albeit for the ultimate cure? The debate about the medical and theological aspects of smallpox inoculation occupied a significant chapter in 18th and 19th century history. Rabbis at the time debated the issues and were well aware of the risks associated with vaccination. Rabbi Yisrael Lifshitz, author of the Tiferes Yisrael, which is right below this on the next source, wrote as follows, argued in favor of inoculation despite its own risks, and you'll see now in 1 second, we'll tell you why. In source number 3, the Tiferes Yisrael is a commentary on the Mishnah. And in Maseches Yuma, he writes as follows, Umizeh nirali heter lasos, what's that word? Inoculation, shell, pakakin, smallpox. Af she'echan me'elef meis, ayidei, ha-inoculation, even though 1 in 1,000 will die because of the inoculation. Al choponim, she'im yishavu bo ha-pakakin, ha-tivim, ha-sakana krova yoser. Well, maybe 1 in 1,000 or 1 in 200 are ever going to die from the vaccine, but if you don't get the vaccine, the odds are you're more likely to get it and to die. So, v'lachein rashay lachnis es atzmo b'sakana rechoka kedi latzil es atzmo b'sakana kreva. Right, just do the math. Right, it makes sense. I can put myself in a lower level sakana in order to save myself from a higher level sakana. V'raya berura. How do I know? The divrei nidvarai mimashikosav Rabbeinu Beis Yosef b'tur choshen mishpat sof simin tav chavav v'shem Yerushalmi. Let's say somebody else is for sure going to die. They're in a situation that is really, really, really dangerous. And for you, it's a little bit dangerous. So the Beis Yosef says you have to put yourself in that suffix sakana in order to save somebody else. You see your friend drowning going to drown in the river. Who maybe he won't for sure die, right? There's a he probably will, but not some possibility he can be saved. If you have to put yourself in, again, some level of sakana to save somebody else, if I'm required to put myself at a certain level of risk. Again, you're not expected to jump in the river necessarily and put yourself in serious sakana, but to do something, get closer, etc., to try to help them, that you are required to do. So if I'm required to do that for somebody else's life, so certainly I'm required to do that for, or at least allowed to do it, for my own life. Fine. Fine, we mentioned the other...
But in that case, person's in immediate danger, as opposed to if you're getting vaccination... You're not in any danger right now. You're saying, put myself in...
Correct, correct.
So you're save myself.
So you could say that. What could you argue the opposite direction? What's the other way to say that? You're right. You could say that right now.
That you're always in danger if you don't have the vaccination.
Right. What you could say is that because the statistics show that people... Again, well, let's be clear. For any one individual, you're probably correct, right? For any particular individual, right now, not getting an MMR... So they're not really at risk because 97% of the population gets them, probably, something like that. So I'm not really personally at risk, in which case I am violating, I am putting myself in some level of risk for a very, you know, who knows, maybe it's equal, the percentages, they're both very low, of picking up the disease, or of getting sick if I don't get it. Correct. When it's going to become, if everybody does that, what's going to happen, right? That's a good point. Okay, what's the halacha? Where do you get an idea that a person not allowed to put himself in danger? This one we've done a couple times. So, okay, yeah, what do you mean? Going to war is allowed. You're allowed to go to war.
Not if you go to war and you're afraid to go to war. Newly,
okay.
Newly married.
Well, are those people who are allowed to go back from war, okay?
You're saying where's the halacha from about
not... I want to know halacha that you're not allowed to put yourself in danger. Where's that come from?
You're not allowed to harm yourself.
Right.
It's Hashem's body or something.
Right.
It's also Parshas Nitzavim, where it says you should live by them.
Okay, Bechavim. Yeah, so if you look at source number four, we have two psukim. One of them we've seen a couple times. Right, which really means guard your soul, means don't forget the mitzvahs, right? But then it's another pasuk, Nishmartim me'od l'nafshecheichem, be very careful to guard your nefesh. Again, which really the actual pasuk is referring to your neshama, right? But nevertheless, be careful to keep the mitzvahs, etc. However, Chazal bin Dorish, this pasuk to mean a requirement to guard your life. It's interesting that the Rambam in sources number 5 and 6 has a somewhat of a stira in how he articulates this iser. There's one other case, a halacha that tells you to be careful to make sure not only you but others are not harmed from danger. Which halacha would that be? It has to do with construction.
The fence around the roof.
The requirement of a makkah, right? The requirement of a makkah. Very good. The requirement of a makkah. If you have a landing right on top of your roof somewhere and people go out there, is you have a requirement to put a fence around it, even if you have a patio. That's, you know, 10 tefachim high. You have to put a fence around it. Why? Someone shouldn't fall off and get hurt. From there, the Gemara learns other cases. You shouldn't have a dangerous animal, dangerous dog. Actually, Kelet Ra, one of the examples the Gemara gives. You shouldn't put v'lotasim dami b'vesecha. You shouldn't have things in your rishus that are going to cause other people to get hurt. Right? It's a general requirement of making sure that yourself and others don't get in physical harm.
We also have an American law. We have a legal precedent that said that your desire to do things cannot infringe upon others. You can't just yell fire at a movie theater.
Right, right, right. That's one of the big questions about the religious exemption. Because if you, I've heard a lawyer talk about this. A guy, it's a constitutional lawyer who I heard interviewed, who said, it's such a fascinating concept to say to be a religious exemption, because in religious exemptions, in general, the rule always is, that's always fine if you're not doing harm to anybody else. You can't have a religious exemption to whatever, fill in the blank, something ridiculous. My religion requires me, I mean, to kill people, whatever, right? Obviously, that's not a religious exemption, right? So a religious exemption that is putting other people in harm's way is a funny concept in law, even American law, but fine. But the bottom line is that this is the concept, this is the pasuk that's used to a requirement for us to guard their body in general, keep themselves healthy. So the Rambam actually has two ways of talking about it. Source number 5, the Rambam says, this is it for a person to curse himself. Not just to curse, others, to curse your own self. Why? For this pasuk, Yisham lecha shmor nafshecha me'od. Why? Because by cursing yourself, you are asking the Ribbono Shel Olam to hurt you. Right? You're not guarding your body. You're not protecting yourself. He says in source number 6, a different halacha. He says that Agag and any other place that has sakana, that you have to be careful to guard and make sure someone can't fall off. And he says, well, these things are the same reason. Quotes the same pasuk, right? You have to be careful. So what's the difference? One is you're not allowed to curse yourself, and one is you have to put up fences, etc., to make sure real fences and not real fences, but guards to make sure people don't get hurt. What's the difference in terms of how you formulate it that way? Why does that matter?
Can you say what the two are again?
Yeah, one is I have to be careful. I'm not allowed to curse myself because that can endanger myself. And the second is I have to put up a fence to make sure someone doesn't fall off and get hurt.
Right, so you can't immunize yourself because it might cause a problem.
Okay.
But you can't not do it because you might get somebody else.
Okay, so that's one side. It's
being defensive versus being offensive.
Ah, very good. Very good. Meaning, is the requirement of Shemar Nafshecha Me'od that you have to make sure bad things don't happen? Or does that mean you have to be proactive in making sure that you, or sorry, is an isser to do something damaging to yourself, let's say? Or is it a requirement to be preventative, to do preventative measures to make sure that you don't, right? If it's a proactive mitzvah to make sure that you don't find yourself in a situation where you get sick or hurt, so that would be, again, another maybe proof to the requirement, the responsibility of a person to do whatever they can to make sure that they're protecting themselves from dangerous things. So you could argue in either direction. So I shouldn't get a vaccination because I should protect myself from danger. Or I should get a vaccination to protect myself from danger. Right?
Well, think about it this way. If you're putting up a maka on your roof, when you first go up on the roof, there's no maka there.
Well, you have to.
If you've got it, no, but the point is the first that time you go up, you're allowed to go up there. You're expected to go up there, even if it's putting yourself in a little bit of danger, because you're putting some, you're creating a greater fence, literally, for
somebody else. That's a really, really interesting point. That's fascinating. It's a really good point.
I got the brains in my family.
Yeah, that's good. What you got, Elijah?
I got the looks.
It's a really good point. It's a great raya. How am I supposed to make a maka if I have to put myself in danger to prevent others from being put in danger? I think it's a really interesting point.
Don't we generally prioritize prohibitions and transgressions above positive mitzvot to do something?
Los hases instead of hases, yeah.
Yeah, so avoiding doing something bad is better than doing something good, basically.
I just think that's a great example that you're allowed to put yourself in danger to put the maka up. It's an interesting point. But the bottom line is, you see, certainly, certainly possible, according to the Rambam, this Shmor Nafshecham Od is, again, a requirement to do things positive. Again, you have to figure out what the percentages are of the danger right now. The percentages on both sides are not that high for an individual, right, in either case. But what about the following? This is what we were getting to before. What if, in order to keep yourself healthy, right, to prevent one danger, you have to enter yourself into another danger, right? So that's the issue here, in theory. Assuming that you think the vaccinations are really dangerous in any way, which, again, I think many in the medical community would say, that's ridiculous, they're not even dangerous. But let's even assume that there's some amount of danger. So that brings us back to our favorite concept. Our favorite concept, source number 7, is the Gemara talks about the situation where someone is involved in doing something that some could consider it dangerous, but since so many people do it, and they do it, and they end up okay in the end, what do we say? Shomer Psayim Hashem. Hashem protects the fools. Right? When I do something that most people do, right, and they do it all the time, and they seem to generally be okay, even though it is something that could be, you might have classified it as dangerous, since everyone does it, and generally they're fine, so Shem B'Shem Hashem, I guess, must mean that Hashem gives us protection on this one, and it becomes permissible to do. Examples we've given before, driving in a car, things that are necessary for the world to run, getting on a boat, even though you're going to make bench gomel afterwards, all these types of things that are technically have a dangerous element to them, since something that people do all the time, they generally end up okay. So we say, Shomer B'Shem Hashem, yeah.
Pregnancy fall into this?
Yes. Yeah, well, pregnancy is a little different because it's Ramosha has a tshuva on this, where he actually talks about, this is where he talks about the idea of getting induced. Getting induced, whether getting induced is mutter or not. So it's an interesting shaila. Obviously, when the doctor requires it, it's a different story. But sometimes doctors say, I'm going away for the weekend. When do you want to have your baby, right? Or I'd like you to have your baby on this date. So Moshe has a tshuva where he says that even though women were, cursed with the curse of pain in childbirth, they were also given the bracha of protection during childbirth. He says, because he says it must be, because otherwise HaKadosh Baruch Hu put them in that situation of sakana if he didn't also give them the promise of protection. Again, it doesn't always come through, but it generally does. So he says, but that only applies, Ramosha writes, if you allow nature to take its course. But if you preempt nature, you don't necessarily have that same havtacha, that same promise of protection. But it's a different story. But yes, it's a similar thing. So the question is, how does this play out? And we've talked about this in past. We talked about smoking. We talked about marijuana, and we talked about, you know, risky, you know, bungee jumping and stuff. You mentioned this concept also, but there's different approaches in the Achronim. How do you deal with this? So Rabbi Yosef, we mentioned before, I think, that it's only true when there's some need to partake in the activity. If the activity has some, you know, importance in the world, we mentioned others say it's important for the running of the world, then the world to go normally. That's why you can have an army, you can have someone be a police officer and a firefighter, even though those things are dangerous, it's part of the normal running of the world. So if Vavadi is a similar thing, there's some tzorech, then it's permissible. But just random, for no reason, then we don't say Shavim B'Shayim Hashem, even by things that people get through and they end up being okay. So certainly that would apply to an inoculation, right? If it's something like a vaccine, and there's some type of risk that exists, okay, but since the whole world is doing it and generally people are fine, so we would assume that that would be a heter for a person to be involved in giving a vaccine, even though you might argue there's some type of, you know, again, that doesn't make there be a requirement to do it yet, necessarily, but it makes it permissible to do, even if you want to argue there's some type of danger. So there's certainly we already find first of all, that's permissible to have vaccinations. There'd be no question at this point that it is not us to get vaccinated. I think that we can already see. The question of being required, we'll get to in a second, but what about the question of what it affects other people, right? The question of, like, public health risks. How does that work out? So a couple of interesting Piskei Halacha that are not the same, but they're similar. Shlomo Zalman Auerbach has a piece where he writes, the halacha is a woman who gave birth within 3 days of Yom Kippur is permissible for her to eat on Yom Kippur. So he says, what about a woman who gave birth 71 and a half hours before Yom Kippur? Okay, so meaning she'd be okay, she'd be fine, right? If she fasted, she'd probably be fine. Again, it depends on the situation, but right, a woman who gave birth 12 hours of Yom Kippur, for sure, is right? But she's right on the fringe, just at the end, like, it would probably be fine. So he says, we never would say to that woman that she should fast. She should eat. You let her eat just like everybody else. Why? He says, because if you don't say that, what's going to happen? If she's told that she should eat, well, because it's only the end of the third day, so what's going to happen? So other women are going to say, well, maybe that's also not okay for me. And what's going to end up happening is, it's going to end up being dangerous for those women. Again, is a halacha about one individual, which may not even apply to that individual totally, but that we have a certain plaque for this person because we care about how it's going to apply to everybody else in that group, right? Which is an interesting point. It's not exactly the same, but it's interesting. Rav Shai Yisraeli in Eretz Yisrael writes that even if you don't have that we only allow pikuach nefesh on Shabbos if the chola is right in front of you. Right? You don't just say pikuach nefesh on any issue, any percentage. So he says, but what about if it's going to lead to future situations of danger if you don't do a certain, you're not mechal Shabbos in a certain case. So he says, for example, allowing soldiers to come back from battle on Shabbos. We have this halacha by EMTs, right? They can come home on Shabbos from a run. Why? Because if you don't let them come back, you're nervous that next time they won't go out. So the same thing he had by Chayalim, that they have certain heterim in terms of coming back on Shabbos, because you're nervous if they don't do so, they may not go back out, and so it'll lead to public safety issue for the state of Israel. So it's just another example of, again, it's not the same case, but it's a time when we have a halacha for an individual, which is paskin for that individual because of the impact that it has on everybody else in the group, which is a very interesting point. Okay. So take a look now at a couple of pieces here in some of the interesting Piskei Halacha. So one is, can you force, source number 8 is from Zilberstein from Vaharevna fame, if you're ever a Shalashadis. Our Shalashadis. So Zilberstein was asked the following question. Ha'im mutar l'rofim l'kvot al hatzibor, can you force the community lakacha trufot mana o zrikot hanikraot zrikot chisun. Chisun is the Hebrew word for vaccinations. Is it permissible to force people to take vaccinations? Kigona adeshali askimu latapel bachale ela imkein yikapel chisun. You say, I won't take anyone into my practice who doesn't accept vaccinations. Okay, can you say that? Can you, as a doctor, decide I'm only going to take patients who will take vaccines? Sharei Afapi says we quote Elu Michas note Nikol Makom Harelefis Sifri Harifua Hein Gormot Nezek Gufani Be'erech Le3% Me'amekablim. So because there are 3% of the people who have some type of negative reaction, let's say it doesn't have to be necessarily so extreme, but some negative reaction to the vaccine. So how can I force someone to join my practice to take vaccines if it's going to be causing them pain? Bet Hayim Utali Grom Nezek Vadai. To 3% of the tzibur, k'tidon l'nasod v'limnoa machala efsharit she'na pikuach nefesh to 97%. So the second question is, am I allowed to cause that? I know by definition that by giving a vaccine, so it might cause pain to somebody, it might hurt somebody, but it's trying to, again, to help the other 97%. Tshuva, yesh la'aniach shakol adam yaskim lekabel to'elas v'97%. Lamrod ha'chashash ha'katan shel 3%. Most people would agree. Betting man, right, would take 97% versus 3%, right? Ukamoshi aduha klal limuta lo chayshinim. We don't care about the very small minority. The gamatara nitna rishus l'rofe l'rabbi. This is a very important point. Lamrot shekayam chashash semer yazik. Every doctor knows, right? The rule in medicine is do no harm. You want to do no harm, but the reality is that doctors make mistakes. Doctors do things that they think will help a patient and instead it hurts a patient. Doctors make mistakes that sometimes kill a patient. Right? That is part of the risk you take if you're going to treat a patient. Medications by definition can be damaging to the body. Every medication has side effects. Right? So any doctor who's treating a patient will be taking upon themselves that risk of hurting somebody else. So what Zilberstein says is that the reshus l'rofe l'rape, the pasuk v'rapo y'rape, which gives the permission for a doctor to help somebody else, to help heal them, gives them the permission, in a certain sense, to cause harm. Not on purpose, but it's going to happen. The doctor shouldn't say, I can't do this because maybe I'm going to hurt somebody, maybe I'll end up killing somebody. That you don't say. You don't have to worry about that. You do your job. So he says in such a case that he wasn't going to require them to, it's not really a question. It's funny. At this point, though, from what was here, I realize he doesn't have the answer. Can he force them? I don't see that answer. He seems to say it's permissible for sure to give them. I don't have here, maybe it was, I didn't see it there. The answer, but it's permissible to force them. But we're going to get to that in a second also. Take a look at the next piece. The next piece is a note in Rabbi Bush's article where he quotes from Rabbi Tatz, Rabbi Kiva Tatz from, I think he's more famous for his books on Hashkafa that a lot of kids read in Israel. You know, but what are the books called? What are they called? Anybody know? I forget. Whatever. Anyways, he has a couple of very interesting books on Machshava in English. Really good stuff. But he's also a doctor, which I didn't know. And he's written a number of books on these types of questions, dangerous disease and dangerous therapy. And he writes about a conversation that he had with Rabbi Yashiv about this question. The question was as follows. The question was put to Rabbi Yashiv, who ruled that the parents should accede to immunization despite their concerns. I mean, parents came to Dr. Tatz and they said, I think they came to somebody else who asked Dr. Tatz, if parents want to know, they have this concern, are they required to give an immunization according to halacha? When asked if the reason, so he said they should do it. They should give the immunization. When asked if the reason behind this ruling was the issue of fairness and the obligation to share responsibility, meaning it's not fair that somebody else has to vaccinate and you don't have to, Rabbi Yashiv indicated that it was. His reason was that since immunization of children is normal practice throughout the world, one should follow that normative course. It's sort of, by the way, Shomer Psayim Hashem. Right? You don't have to worry that they will get hurt by vaccinations because that's what people are doing. But it's beyond that. It's not only saying that that's why it's permissible. Rav Yashiv is wanting to say that the fact that it's normative practice means it is required. In fact, Rav Yashiv went so far as to assert that failure to immunize would amount to negligence. He then continues, refusing childhood immunizations on the basis of unsubstantiated fears. This is not Rabbi Yashiv's English, that's for sure. Unsubstantiated fears of vaccine side effects is irresponsible and out of order halachically. The danger of precipitating epidemics of measles, poliomyelitis, and other diseases with potentially devastating complications is far more real than the dangers attributed to vaccines on the basis of anecdotal claims. until objective evidence to the contrary accrues, the halachically correct approach is to do what is normal. There's also a concept, by the way, in halacha, I believe it's in Hilchos Yom Kippurim, that if a person says they need to eat and you're not sure, like they're not feeling good, how good do they feel? So the halacha is you follow the approach of rov rofim. Whatever the majority of doctors say, that's what you do. This person needs to eat, they don't need to eat. You ask a bunch of doctors, whatever they say, whatever the majority opinion is. Right? So if, yes, there are those who want to claim that the pharmaceutical companies have paid off all of the you know, the everybody, and everybody's in on it, and it's all a ruse, and it really just to make more money on vaccines, etc. Okay, but if we only have what we have, and we have the doctors that we trust. And so if the majority of doctors say that this is something you should do, that's what you should do. So he writes, until objective evidence to the contrary accrues, the halakhically correct approach is to do what is normal. In addition, legitimate government legislation concerning standards of medical conduct adds weight to their halakhic acceptability. What do we call that?
Dina
de Malchus Adina.
Right.
When it's not contrary to halakha, Dina de Malchus Adina, like we mentioned last week.
So if there was no religious exemption, then we would say it's required because you have to follow the laws of the land.
Or maybe it's an interesting question. Do we say Dina Machus Adina? And since let's pause for a second. According to Rav Yashiv, is there such a thing as a religious exemption for a Jew not to get vaccinated? For sure not. For sure not. It's usher not to get a vaccine. So the argument of religious exemption for a Jew, according to Rav Yashiv, is ridiculous.
Then how are these communities rationalizing it?
That's a very good question. Very good question.
All the sources that you're giving us say,
right,
at the very least, it's permissible, if not required. So where is the source for the justification?
So let's go. So let's keep going. Fine, good. So Rabbi Tatz, I heard him interviewed, is like Eish Lahav, like crazy on this. Like he thinks it is total insanity that anybody would not vaccinate their kid. It's craziness. It's not based on medical facts. And people who are, there are things like, there was a rumor going around that Rav Chaim Kanievsky said that vaccinations are narishkeit. This is what happens in these places sometimes. So he didn't say that. They have a video and they interviewed him later. He didn't say that. He said, you should vaccinate. But this is the type of thing that happened. Like, and you're going to see in a second some of these things from Rabbanim, letters from Rabbanim in certain places, telling the people in the community that they should vaccinate. But all you need when you're living in a community where Das Torah rules, and not necessarily medical knowledge only, so then all you need is a rabbi who doesn't know enough to say something, right? And people will follow. And it's complicated. Look at the Nishmas Avram in source number 10. Rabbi Dr. Abraham S. Abraham. Rabbi Abraham writes as follows. Ein kol safek shesidras hachisunim shayelad mekabel beofen shigrati monas machalot mimenu umea uchlusia. So it's clear, he says, that the typical set of vaccines that are given out prevent disease. Ach yesh harim shemefachadim meizeshu sikun sheyesh v'davar. But there are parents who are sometimes nervous. Amar li marin of Rabbeinu Rav Neuvert. Rav Neuvert is famous from writing. He wrote Shmir Shabbos Kelchasa. Rav Neuvert, right? Rabbi Newworth, somebody sees in English, right? So Rav Neuvert is very close Talmud of Rishon Mazon Orbach. So he said, "She'ekev ha'pachad hazeh lo nitam b'halacha la'achriach horim she'yaldeihem yikablu achisunim." He says, you can't force them. "Af api she'chayavim lahamlitz aleihem me'od kedei l'shachnam." He says, look, I can't tell you that you have to force them to do so. They have a concern. It's not a craziness. Rav Shechter actually writes, Shom Shem Hashem depends on your own personal concern. And if you think something is dangerous, you have a reason to be nervous. And you can not do certain things based on that concern. V'hu adin lagabi chisunim neged machalas negifit shal akaved o ababiyot shecharot b'mikra hatzorech. It's true to other vaccines also. Bottom line is, Rav Neuvert thinks it's a very, very good idea. You should really, really try to convince them to do so. But he thinks the halacha, you can't force them. That you can't force them to do so. So again, source number 11. The Lakewood Bay, there was a based in Lakewood just now. Rabbi Shmuel first, Rabbi Shmuel Reisman, Rabbi Aaron Sorcerer, who sent out the following letter in Lakewood. Binogay, because the question really came up in Lakewood was, can you prevent children from going to school? That was the big question. Can you prevent children from going to school if they're not vaccinated? So Binogay to your Shaila, you have it there? Source number 11? Yeah, you have it there? to your shana concerning whether to accept into your school children who are not immunized. After thoroughly researching the issue and hearing from both sides, including medical professionals, the opinion of the Beis Din is as follows. It is our opinion that every parent is obligated, al pi din, to immunize his children in order to prevent serious illness, chas v'shalom, fine, both to protect himself and the tzibor. School should enforce this policy as required by law and should insist on immunization records. But also, by the way, like as we know, like when you get to like a little more heimish, you know, schools, etc., so like they're not as always, you know, as medactic on some of these things. So that sometimes, and that's like part of what happens also. So here they're being very makbid that they should be makbid on this stuff. If an individual, based on his doctor and or Rav's advice, should choose not to immunize, the school may accept a child without requiring immunization. It is, in fact, recommended they do so. In a case where the school feels that it will be negatively affected by such a policy, the school has the right not to accept a child. Shalas in this area should be referred to the Beis Din. All of the above must be done in conformity with Dina de Machusa. Okay? So they said, basically, that everyone's required to do so. Some person has some reason why they don't want to, so the school has a right not to accept the child, but if they want to, they can. There was another letter written by Shmuel Kamenetsky and Ramakiel Cutler and Shlomo Miller, which said since risks for vaccination are real, a person is not obligated to do so, and the schools cannot ban children from such a school. So, which made some doctors very upset that such a letter was sent in Lakewood. If you look in the next two sources, it's very hard to read, but this one is November 13, 2018. Okay, just a few days ago, where Rabbi Yonah Reese, the Av Beis Din of the CRC, he used to be the dean of Reitz, Rabbi Shmuel first, the dayan of a Agudas Yisrael of Illinois, which is the Haredi head of the Beis Din, they wrote together that it is required. A person is required. Look at the bottom. Accordingly, we would like to say the following. It's incumbent upon all members of the community to ensure that they and their children receive measles vaccination. Even for those not inclined to vaccinate, this is required of them based on the principle of Chamir Sakanta Mi Yisura. We're more worried about danger than we are from Yisurim. And it just, right. And no one in their right mind would have meat and fish together on the same plate. Right? Crazy. Orthodox Jew, you go, no, crazy. That's like the worst thing in the world. Where's that come from? It's a Gemara. It says that it's dangerous, really, to cook meat and fish together. So we don't eat meat and fish together. That's a sakana issue. It's not a halacha. It's sakana, right? So like we're so machmir on that, yet like, well, vaccinations, what's the big deal, right? Like it's craziness. And he says why? Based on the mandate of Nishmarta Milan Afshar Sechem. Two, nobody has the right to endanger others by not vaccinating their children. This is a violation of Lo Samar Adam Recha. Right? Do not stand by. The blood of your fellow is being spilled. Furthermore, during a time of measles outbreak, exposing others to an unvaccinated individual is equivalent to an act of rodef. That's a very serious thing to say.
That means you can kill them.
I mean, that's... I mean, yes. Yes, technically. I'm not advocating such a move to kill someone who's not vaccinated. But that's what they're saying. In a time of an outbreak, a child who's not vaccinated and therefore is a couple of days before the child even comes out with the disease where that you can see it, so they can be in school, right, infecting other kids, yes, with a much serious, really serious disease. We urge all schools, play groups, and schools to ban any child or adult who has not been vaccinated. This is nothing less than a matter of pikuach nefesh.
Right, so why would the Lakewood Beis Din come with option number two?
I don't know. Just for the record,
the Rav's advice. What Rav would give
him? I don't know. Shmuel Kamenetsky apparently wrote this thing where he said, you know. I don't know. They must have been speaking to other people who gave them other doctors.
The three other points are pretty strong.
Yeah.
Oh,
what do you mean? It's gonna continue. But this one you mean? On the
11.
Yeah. I
1, 2, and 4 are pretty like.
Yeah.
Go do it.
Right. If you don't want to, whatever. Right. I don't know. It's a good question. This last one, not 12, but the one before 12, from Morgenstern, was the right hand man to Rabbi Yashiv, and he was like his closest Talmud.
I think I get the
and he says, a similar thing. He says Rabbi Yosha's point, though, was not, he said you wouldn't call it Losama Adam Riacha. And he says, if you look at the bottom of that, I know it's a little hard to see. He says in parentheses, the way end, he says, V'kamaduma sheyesh ta'us ba'davar zeh shemachanis shemechanim davar zeh lo tamor adam riacha. He says, that's wrong. Don't stand idly by while your friend is getting, that's someone who's drowning and I'm gonna walk away. Right? Ein zeh nachon, she'eino nimna melahatzio, ela mazik ba'atzmo. He says, you're not saving somebody. He says, you're actively causing someone to get hurt. Yeah. And someone to get chas v'shalom that could die from your decision not to vaccinate. So look, just hammer home your religious exemption point in church number 12. Rabbi Bush writes this following at the end of his article. In numerous states, parents wishing not to vaccinate their children are permitted to sign a document stating that their religious convictions do not allow them to, based on this signature, the child will then be permitted to attend the school under law. It is reported that small numbers of parents in Jewish schools have signed such documents. For a parent of a yeshiva student to sign such a statement in the name of Judaism is not just inappropriate, it is false. Whether a posik will rule that child immunizations are obligatory in halacha or are discretionary but highly advisable, there is no position in halacha that says there is any prohibition or a compelling reason to refrain from such vaccinations. That's nonsense. Right, you want to say that maybe it's not absolutely required, the percentages are so low. Okay, so there's such a, you could make a halachic argument not to handcuff everybody and absolutely require them, even though it's really, really, really the right thing to do. But to say that there's a religious exemption is nonsense. In fact, this constitutional lawyer who I heard interviewed said the opposite. He goes, if anything, the religious exemption, if you want, the argument is that the First Amendment, right, of being able to express your freedom of religion, religious expression. He says the people who should argue that are the schools. The schools can argue, we have a religious requirement to vaccinate, and therefore we're not going to allow any child in who are not vaccinated. He says to say that the religious exemption should be for the kid not to be allowed into the school, it should be the opposite. But the point is that there's a lot to be said in this issue. And it's not stopping. As I mentioned before, I got an email just from this daycare that changes policy. And I think that's, whatever. I'm not here to talk public policy per se. That's not, I'm not, like, I'm not, not a barach. What?
Do you think we're
going to
see policies in shuls?
That's a good question. I don't know. It's a good question. I don't know that the issue is, I don't know. It's a good question. If such a scenario would come up in the modern Orthodox community, you probably would start to have a conversation like that. I think
I could be mistaken, but Hank in Nass County has an issue where there's somebody who's not getting immunized, and they've said okay.
There's a case in New York State in the whatever some court there right now, fighting out this issue. Maybe it's Hank. I don't know what school it is. Fighting out this issue right now. Right now, the kid's not in school. It's like a whole debate going on. Well, but it hasn't come to the fore in the modern Orthodox community. If it does,
a shul could
do the same thing.
You're not welcome.
Correct. If you're not vaccinating your children, it could be your children. Because again, remember, there's always going to be certain children that pop in every population who are not vaccinated because they're immunocompromised. You always have kids like that. So those kids are always at risk.
And even though. The CRC in Chicago came out with this proclamation. There is still an assumed exception for those who, for whatever medical reason, are unable.
Very good. Thank you for pointing it out. Well, obviously, if someone is medically compromised, and for them it's a serious risk, right? So for them, clearly the risk is higher than, again, there is the 2-3% who will be fine, right, if everyone else is vaccinated.
Right.
Those kids, it's better for them to take that risk than the risk of the inoculation, presumably. Again, not being a medical expert, but that's my understanding. Is that if that facts on the ground are true in that way, then it would be taka usur to do so, and that kid would not get a vaccine. But then the point is that other people make that choice of putting these other kids, it's not their fault, who can't get the vaccine and putting them at risk.
Now, that said, there are doctors and other advocates in the world who say, wait a second, who are still,
who would be very upset with the things I said today.
Who say very clearly, no, you should not be getting
vaccinated.
Is it a halakhic problem? I mean, moral is different, but is there a halakhic problem for a from Jew to be one of those people advocating against vaccination.
So the doctors that I know and have given the information that I have would argue, yes, that they're putting people in danger. I'm not here to offer my medical expertise on that question. I don't want to say I know anything about it. But people, the argument that's made is that it's not medical. There's been no evidence that is shown, and there've been multiple studies shown that there is no correlation between MMRs and autism or other things like that. So those who argue have other things that they bring to the fore, anecdotal stuff, etc., that they think it does. Okay, but the vast majority of the literature argues not that way. You hear those who make these arguments argue that argument that, well, they can't really ever have a real study because everyone's paid off by the pharmaceutical companies who fund all their advertising, yada, yada. Okay, it's an argument. I follow doctors. When in doubt, doctors and a lot of other good stuff. I have an assumption that the doctors who have done all the other wonderful things in the world, and by the way, have beaten the tobacco industry and other industries and to prove the dangers of smoking, right? Even though the tobacco industry was a very, very powerful industry, it didn't matter. When the facts became clear, it didn't make a difference.
Right.
Somehow, when it comes to this issue, we assume that the pharmaceutical companies can win the war. Again, I'm not an expert in this machlokas, but that the argument would be made if you believe that the medical evidence is as is, then yes, someone who's advising people not to get vaccines would be lift naive in certain situations. If you assume it's required, could possibly lift naive on some of these easier possibilities.